Hey, George. What a sense of power. Oh, my George, what a sense of power. Stop it, George. That was indecent. Millions of waiting listeners, and Shepard's got him right there in the palm of his hand. Oh. This is Captain Midnight here, friends, who can leap distances with a simple wave of his hand, who can penetrate impenetrable walls with the piercing glare of his eye. Did I ever tell you the story about this bartender over on 3rd Avenue with the, he had this dachshund, see, bow-legged dachshund, and, I better say that till later. That's later in the semester. It's, bring it on, George, please, big. For God's sake. Oh, by the way, for the benefit of those of you who are squeamish, tonight is a sexy show, so stay away. Yes, tonight's show is dedicated to passion. La-da-da. As a true public service, this is the first radio station who is going to recognize the fact that passion comes in many forms. It does, you know. Most Americans think of passion only in sexual terms. Correct them all? Nothing could be further from the truth, and a few people in history have discovered the truth. Like, for example, Henry VIII. I mean, he not only dug chicks, but that's not all. I mean, the classic picture of Henry VIII throwing a giant soup bone over his shoulder is not lost on scholars of passion. That's get everything warmed up here. You don't mind George doing? Amazing what man can do. Oh, that's beautiful. Let's try this one. All right, George. Ein, zwei, drei. And tonight, this totally involved radio station, recognizing its public indebtedness, brings to you a program of exquisite public service devoted to the recognition of one of the great unsung pleasures of man. Bring it on, please, George. Thank you very much. Big, big, I say big, big. My God, do it big, big, big. I say full. That's it. Thank you. That was wonderful. I've reset that, George. We may try that again. Very good. It's more fun than standing in the shower, you know. Caro syrup pouring out of the spout. I'm waiting for George to get it reset in there. Thank you, George. Now, you mind if I try the other one on the other table there for a minute? I want to get everything warmed up here. Thank you, George. You're looking at a pro, you two, right? That was great, George. Thank you very much. That's very good. Now, I'll tell you why this sudden exuberance here. Not only is it summertime, of course, you know, summer in itself is sensual. I mean, just the fact of summer. You agree? Oh, yeah. Passions run high. And as the temperature rises, so goes the passions. Oh, yeah. If you've ever seen a South American revolution, you'll know about that. With the sun hanging high, oh, man, oh, man. You never hear of the Eskimos revolting, do you? Right. Well, I mean it. I say man is a creature of his entire body. He not only, you know, relates to the fact that the sun is beating down on top of his knob, which is part of you, you know, after all. He also relates to the fact that there's an unbelievable chick in the neighborhood. He relates to that. And he relates to things which are usually left to lesser mortals. With all due respect to Alfred McCann tonight, he never talks about the passion side of great food. You know, he talks about recipes from the good folk from the New Jersey Egg Council, but that's not what we're talking about here. The striped bass. No, not at all. I'll tell you one of the most great sexual moments in your life, I should say passionate moments, is the totally unprepared for, unexpected, great scoff. Now, when you know, generally when you prepare for a great meal, you know, you say to yourself, I'm going to have this groovy meal. It turns out to be, you know, never makes it quite. It's the unexpected scoff. Do you mind tonight if I do a show? Because most people, you see, measure their existence by various things that hardly ever get into novels. I'm talking about most people. They measure their lives not only by coffee spoons, with due respect to T.S. Eliot. They measure their lives. You like that little touch of literacy, don't you, gang? George, that's always good. They, it's going to be Sonic Exuberant tonight, too. They not only measure their lives by these little sneaky things, they also measure their lives by, the kind of stuff that Portnoy doesn't know about. You see, that's a tiny bit of a man. Now, if can you imagine what a great autobiography Henry VIII could write? If he sat down and said, I was born a kid named Hank. And he said, I suppose you want to know about all that jazz who my mother and father were. Well, they were this king, see, and this queen. And that's nothing, see. But, you know, excuse me if I relate now in this case to J.D. Salinger and Holden Caulfield. I suppose you want to know about all that jazz. Well, I got it off quick, see. I had this brother that sold out. They decapitated him. So, anyway, one thing led to the next, and I was king, right? Okay, right. Well, I'll tell you, there's nothing but phonies around me. See, there was this pope, for example, and he goes, nevertheless, he would then begin to regale you not with unbelievable chicks he met. There was this chick I saw one time right down the street. She had this horse, and his name was Ann. Well, I'll tell you this. Of course, later on, she got to be quite a drag, but for about 20 minutes, you wouldn't believe it. And he goes, Henry was the first guy in history to do what everybody secretly likes to do. Whenever you get all, you know, you get tired of this chick that's hanging around, you decapitate her, you see. You start all over again. And, but I shouldn't talk like this tonight. This is a serious question. Like tonight, somebody sent me a letter, see, and they says, dear Mr. Shepherd, there's always a type, see, you can tell it's kind of shaky handwriting, purple ink and all. And says, I want you to read this and take it to heart. And it's some article in some magazine like, Reader's Digest, something. It wasn't exactly that. It was some magazine like that, see. And it was an article about sex by a priest. Well, that's kind of funny, you know, to go to a priest for, for advice on sex is really, seriously, it's like going to a guy who lives in the desert on advice on lemonade. I mean, it's kind of laughed. I thought, well, you know, if I'm going to get advice like that, I think maybe I better go to where it's happening, you know, like Henry VIII or, you know, somebody who, you got to get actual, let's put it this way, experience in the field. And I you can't put experience down. You just can't, you know, you just can't. And I suspect that most kids that are protesting war movies, which is not the same, watching a movie is not the same as, you know, being on a scene. I'm not putting, in fact, I'm even more anti-war than a guy who's never been there, which is usually the case. And once you've been shot at, you get very nervous about guns. Very, very nervous. Very, very nervous. In fact, the Daisy Air Rifle Company just presented me with a Red Ryder BB gun. I'm not kidding you. I got a letter from them, see? And they had to sneak it into the state. You know, it's illegal. So Yeah, it ought to be because you're going to own a bazooka, but... So, anyway, that's true. So, I get this thing, see, and I'm a little nervous about it, see, and it's a BB gun, you know? I said, what do you mean, Shepard? You qualified expert for crying out loud on the M1. What's this BB gun bit? But, you know, it's still, you know, basic nervousness. So, nevertheless, this must be taken into account. And so tonight, I am going to do a show, which... You can turn away. I mean, it's all right with me. I mean, that's up to you, friend. I, you know, your problem is not mine. You can do your own thing, like turn the knob. Now, my thing tonight, I'm going to do this thing, because it's time that it's recognized. Before we do that, let's get a couple. You got the money button ready there, George? Hold, wait a minute. We've got a button here in the station, for those of you who wonder about this. Technical things in press people, and they're interested in it. And we have two actually parallel circuits here at the station. Great electronic circus. You know what a circuit is, right? You don't. Well, then we'll have to start from the top there, won't we? Well, that's next semester. Nevertheless, let's put it this way. There are two avenues of information. There's two great strains run through this whole thing. You see, it's like if there were two backbones. You see, you had one backbone for a swing and the other backbone for walking around looking official. Well, now, this one backbone that we've got here is the money backbone. It's the thing that sends all these little goodies your way, like me. Hi, George. And other things. Like, for example, if you turn your radio up right now, I want you to do that. Turn your radio up as much as you can, George. And would you please turn the gain up? George, I said turn the gain up. All the way. You hear that hum? That's because we got a cheap power supply here. And for those of you that have wondered about that, this is also sent to you by the money department, who figured if we could save a couple of dollars, you know, on filters and the final power supply, every penny saved is a penny earned, right? Hey, George, it is. And so tonight we want to salute that department, which is bringing you this wonderful hum and also bringing you this beautifully contrived Ford commercial. Yeah. Sent to you by the Purina Chip Shop Corporation of Rolston, Illinois. If you've got a hen that's out there laying square eggs, we'd like to recommend to you Purina Chip Shop Square Egg Hen Chow. And we're going to bring you now Homer and Jethro and all the boys kicking it around. Let's hear them banjos play.
And now your local Ford dealers have pooled all their cars for the biggest economy drive ever. Over $90 million worth of Ford cars and trucks. 25,000 vehicles. The year's biggest discounts. Yeah, if your Ford dealer doesn't have your Maverick, Mustang, Torino, or Galaxy in stock, his computerized car locator system will find it for immediate delivery. See your local Ford dealer for big savings now.
Hey, real nice. Real nice. This Cousin Gene sending you the hillbilly hit parade out there tonight, hoping that you're just running around there, kicking and scratching and spitting. And while we're on that subject, friends, why don't you keep your cards and letters coming in, sent to you by the Purina Funeral Monument Corporation of East Peoria, Illinois. For those of you out there that got a loved one lying out tonight in an unmarked grave, we'd like to recommend to you that you send a card to the Peoria Monument Corporation of Peoria, Illinois. Oh, excuse me. I got carried away there. That's another show I used to do. You want to save money? Well, get a late model, low-mileage A1 used car at your local Ford dealers. Have you noticed that Shepard's the only guy on the station that's got used cars on his show? All right, this is WOR New York. Hey, George. Hey, listen, you know, for you guys that are out there constantly griping about, you know, there's no great drama on radio, I would say that all you got to do is listen to any newscast and you're hearing the unbelievable drama. But for those of you who are going out, you know, kvetching that they don't have radio like it used to be, WOR is putting on Death of a Salesman. Now, that's not exactly Jack Armstrong. That's not exactly Superman. In fact, it's, let's put it this way, the other side of the coin of Superman. But, you know, I'm being very literate tonight. Death of a Salesman will be presented on WOR AM radio Sunday, May 17th at 3:30 to 6 o'clock. Now, that takes guts. I'm serious. When a radio station in the middle of, you know, that's on Sunday. That's when the God Squad takes over. Now, on Sunday, in the middle of Sunday, from 3:30 until 6 o'clock in the afternoon, you're going to hear Death of a Salesman. And that is going to cause a lot of trouble in the Norman Vincent Peale crowd.
I want to tell you this. I'm going to tell you. And you know that I'm the only guy probably in the history of New York radio who was ever the subject of a Norman Vincent Peale sermon. Did you know that? That's the truth. I won't tell you this. I won't tell you the details. But nevertheless, it's the truth. And it's because I think one of the great characters of all time is Hickey. You know Hickey. You know who Hickey is? I think Hickey, along with Captain Ahab, and quite possibly Willie Loman, and certainly the stage manager from our town, these are, and you can't ignore Huck Finn, and the unnamed soldier in Red Badge of Courage. These are the great characters of American literature. Of course, you can't ignore Babbitt either. He was pretty good. Unfortunately, he works here on the 23rd floor, so it's not, you know, it's pretty hard to talk about him. Well, so does Willie Loman. Hi, George, come to think of it, so does Captain Ahab. Well, you see, that's what makes a great character. Everybody knows one just like it. Oh, yeah. Everybody knows Ahab. Everybody knows Willie. In fact, most of us grew up with Willie. You know, by God, they really love me down at the bowling alley. You know, if only the right, if the brakes go right, I'll make it. That's Willie. Of course, the brakes ain't going to go right. You got to have a pull. It's who you know. That's Willie Loman. Now, Captain Ahab, what is he? He's the guy that walks around and says, he's Chicken Little. Captain Ahab is Chicken Little. Except the difference between Captain Ahab and Chicken Little is that Captain Ahab got mad that the sky was falling. And he went after the damn sky. He says, I'll show you, sky. And the next thing you know, holy smokes, he's pulled into the deep. By the way, of course, that's another story. You know, again, you know, you got to relate yourself to how you feel, you know, inside. Now, you know, it's easy enough to get out and give a lecture. You know, I think everybody today is lecturing. I think the world is filled with lecturers. I mean, every little two-bit radio station is going to say, well, I want to tell you what I think about Nixon. And I'll tell you this, Barry. My wife, Rhoda, and I. Oh, my God. I mean, it goes on and on and on. This is going to be known as the age of the universal expert. The age that Claude took over. And but that's, you know, beside the point. Everybody, you know, but hardly anybody celebrates. Celebrates life. Because on one hand, we're a political creature, see. Everybody gets hung up on politics. And that's true. Fine. We can't escape it. We are that. On the other hand, we're this other creature. Late at night, see, turns on the light. Walks around, skulks around the kitchen and makes a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Now, I'm sure that even, you know, even Norman Mailer does that. There are moments when Norman Mailer looks at a great big jar of Vita herring and says, I am a herring maven. And he dips in, see? Somebody says, wait a minute, Normie, what about the Chicago 7? He says, Chicago 7, Schmevin, give me the... And he's digging into the maven, the herrings, you know? And that side of life is life. That is called L-I-F-E. The other side is S-O-C-I-E-T-Y. And there's a big difference. Now, I'll tell you what happened tonight. See, I think great unexpected me is like tonight. So I'm walking along this street. Now, get ready with the big record, the big passion record. Hold it there. Now, I'll give you the cue there, George. I'm walking along, see, and I see this crummy little restaurant, right? And it's a crummy kind of a nothing night. The crud, Jersey crud is drifting down, you know. Old burnt cabbage leaves or whatever it is they're burning over there in Jersey. It's like monster dandruff drifting down, you know, from some fantastic monster that's shedding his crud on us, see. And I'm walking along. And there's this little bitty restaurant with a little tiny door, see. It's got a little bitty thing sticking out in front. It says, Restaurante. So I says, ah, well, what the... You know, usually I usually go to my favorite restaurant, you know, Niedek's, 47th and 6th, you know. I said, well, you know, so I walk into this restaurant and I sit down and I say, menu, garçon. And this chick says, oh, may we? And she hands me the menu, see. I look at it, you know. It's written in purple, ain't it? That's always bad news. So I figured, uh-oh, Shepard is getting shucked again. See, oh, man. You know, you always think of yourself, oh, how can I get out of here quick, see? So I says, well, what's the least bad stuff on this thing? And she says, oh, I suggest you try the specialty. And I says, okay, you know, specialty. You know, orange drink with pickle lily. So I said, all right. So she brings the specialty, and it happened. She says, are you in the hurry? I says, no, I'm not in a hurry. You know, because if you say you're in a hurry, you're really going to get it. So I says, no, I all night. So you got no excuse. And she goes away. And about 2.5 hours later, I'm sitting there picking my teeth, you know, lighting matches and playing cards and all that stuff. All of a sudden, she comes with this plate and puts it down in front of me. I look at it. My God Almighty. I want to tell you, for 1 minute, I am believing, for example, that I am having the illusion, hallucination, that the heat has got me. There in front of me is a magnificent steamed brook trout with thinly sliced, so thin they were like paper, thinly sliced 2-hour-old mushrooms with a subtle sauce that Zeus himself would have flipped over. I couldn't believe it. I touched it with my fork, and like some magic, the flaky, magnificent flesh of this brook trout, which obviously was caught not more than 7 minutes before, came off the tiny, thin, needle-like bones, just as in the greatest of all French cuisine exercises. There is an old expression in French, you know, which says, if the flesh of the fish comes not off the rib, then the flesh is not well done. If, on the other hand, the rib comes off with the flesh, it is too well done. How'd you like this? Bum, ba-dum, bum. So she says, would you like a little wine? I says, you bet it. You're pippy, baby. Figuring I'd get Thunderbird number 4. And you know how when they give you this little glass and they let you taste it, usually they put it in there and swirl it around real quick and run? Well, she puts it in the glass, and I noticed there was a strange little odd blue aroma around it, like a kind of nimbus of excellence. I recognized that I was in the presence of greatness. I took one little nip of this wine, just one little. Well, I could see unconscious bodies all around me of people who had passed out because of the, you know, the fantastic, ecstatic experience that they had all, you know, the whole thing. And I realized that I was in the presence of Nero, Caligula, the great unnumbered horde of gourmets before me. Well, reset that, Big George. Reset that. So, you know, it was totally unexpected. Had I prepared for this, you know, I would have, you know, oh, wow. So this chick comes, you know, she comes over, and I couldn't believe it, see. And when do I tell you what happened then? Well, here is this brook trout. Now, you know, most people can take fish or leave it alone. And you've often wondered why people talk about fish. Many people wonder this. Well, that's because most people in this country do not know what to do with fish. Really. We know what to do with steaks. A fish is something most people stick in breadcrumbs, you know, in a bag, and they put the crumbs all over it, see? And, ooh, can you imagine a French chef saying, what is this, a shake and a bake? What is this obscenity? Please, get out of my kitchen. Ooh. Well, that's, you know, that's the American, or taking it out of the deep freeze, you know. Mr. Birdseye has done it for you, you know, somewhere in Iowa. And it comes out like little hard rocks when you put it in, you know. Well, this is why most people don't dig fish. This fish was a pure sensual experience, okay? All right. So I said, I'm reeling, you know. Well, now, the test of a true great restaurant is not one course. But now, you know, you're awaiting. It's like a fantastic fighter that's a 10-round fight, see? And he's fought great for 7 rounds. You say, is he going to make it? You know, let's see what he does in the 8th round, and let's see what he does in the 9th round, and let's see who's standing in the 10th, right? Because, you know, a lot of slobs come out and look bad for 5 rounds, and all of a sudden, bap on the button, they win. And they're the ones that get the laurels. Well, I'm sitting there, see, I says, all right. And so she wheels out the dessert, the carta, you know? Well, not, or I'm not a dessert type, right? Never. I'm really not. I'm not, you know. And so I see over here is this chocolate mousse. Mousse, chocolate, you know. The correct mousse, friends, in case you're curious, should be at least 5 light years lighter than you could ever conceive of a packaged Jell-O pudding ever being. A chocolate mousse should float maybe 6 or 7 inches above your plate. You know? So, in fact, supported only by its total airiness. It is lighter than air, right? Well, I see the chocolate mousse that is floating 1.5 feet above the tray. And so I figured, well, that is the specialty of the house. Now, don't ever trust the place on the specialty of the house. They can cook one thing great, and all the rest of it, you know, is pork and beans. So I said, what is that? Who is that? Ah, she says, you are the true gourmet. And then I realized it hit the jackpot. She hands me this very unprepossessing-looking piece of pie. Just a little piece of thing. It's about 2.5 inches wide at one end. A little tiny piece of pie, see? I says, we shall see. I take my fork and... I take my fork and... Oh, my God almighty! This is obscene! What are they doing to me? This is the way you corrupt a man. This is the way you do it. Not through money. Not through power. But through such obscenities as this. Friends, have you ever had fresh pear pie? Have you ever? I'm asking you a question. I cannot explain. It is made out of fresh pears. Fresh pear pie. What do you do with this? Over it, the slightest touch, just the slightest touch, a faint suggestion of ephemeral, just the slightest suggestion of ephemeral cinnamon custard, just the slight suggestion. You have to look carefully to see it there. I said, what is this? I turned it immediately, Charles Boyer. I says, excellente, goodimo, superbimo, didimo, goodissimo. And she says, may we, sir, it is a pleasure to serve you. I says, may I have the check? Expecting the final bad news. Yes, one gets what one pays for. Mostly. And when one pays for glop, one gets glop. Right? The check came. $4.70. Well? Thank you, George. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. You play well. Never believe that's one man playing all that. Well, I want to tell you, that moment was a moment that I will be a long time forgetting. It was a meal, and I won't tell you where it is. This is my own connection. Well, not tell you where it is, because, you know, the next minute, you know, I get out and I talk about it. The next minute, you know, Howard Johnson buys them out, and then what? Texas Tommy's. 28 flavors, chocolate jimmies, the whole works. You know? Oh, I don't mind Howard. In fact, I like Howard. I've got a Howard Johnson beanie that I wear once in a while. You can buy a beanie, the official Howard Johnson blue and orange colors. You know, it's got a propeller on the top. And when you spin it, you know, it spins. It says, be careful of the donut. It's got a hole in it. It spins like that, you know. And I like it, you know. So, you want to hear another great moment? All of our lives, we all have moments of great. Now, imagine right now, a lot of people are out there talking, hey, you know, that reminds me of the time we did. You remember this? Well, let me tell you another great meal. You never expect it. Did you ever hear of Hathaway shirts? You would not connect Hathaway shirts with food, would you? Every time I see a Hathaway shirt ad now, I think of one of the great scoffs that I had in my life. I don't like to put it this bluntly, a tank town in Maine. And let me tell you, a tank town in Maine makes a tank town in Ohio look like gay Paris. So I am in this tank town, and the Maine industry is making Hathaway shirts. Now, this is Waterville, Maine. Now, the Hathaway Shirt Company is right on a river. It's on this river, the Kennebec River, which flows right through Waterville. So I'm in Waterville, Maine. It is a cold night, as it so often is in Maine. I'm walking down the street with this chick. Don't ask me why, that's another story. I'm walking, it has nothing to do with the story at hand. I'm walking, I'm telling you serious, that has nothing to do. Don't get on an extra. That's another side of the gourmet taste. I'm walking down the street, it's cold, see? And here's the Hathaway shirt plant. It looks like, it's a big factory. It looks like kind of a warehouse, big factory right on the, see, this is a textile mill. And there's nothing open in town except Fred's Greasy Spoon. And one joint. There's a joint that says, Syrian Dagwoods on the window. I'm telling you the truth. Syrian Dagwoods. Did you ever hear of a Syrian Dagwood? Nobody's ever heard of a Syrian Dagwood. There's a great big sign, and it's written in big white, you know, whitewashed letters. It says, Syrian Dagwoods. And there's a guy, and it's a little tiny store about 6 feet square, and there's a guy in a white apron, you know, with fingerprints all over it, and there's about 10 guys buying Syrian Dagwoods. So I said to this chick, how about a Syrian Dagwood? I never heard of them. And she says, where are they? I says, God only knows. But, you know, you don't ask a question about what kind of water it is when you're in a desert. You get it, see? I said, let's get a Syrian Dagwood. So again, the guy says, what do you want? I says, a Syrian Dagwood. Did you want it all the way? That's a Maine type talk. I says, all the way. He says, all right, boys, he wants it all the way. Obviously, this is, you know, a reckless move on my part. So he says, it'll cost you 49 cents. I says, I'm ready to pop. I can spend. He says, all right. So he starts to make a Syrian Dagwood. Takes him 15 minutes. This Syrian Dagwood, I could see right away what's beginning to happen. It is like watching Beethoven sit down. And he says, I think I'll call this one the Ninth. Five minutes later, I'm about to embark on one of the great experiences of my life. The cold northern moon is hanging high in the Stygian sky of Maine. The wind is blowing out of the Canadian wilds. Shepherd is sitting on an old abandoned lock in the dams of the Kennebec River in the dark, with a Syrian Dagwood that weighs 4 pounds in his hands. It is dripping succulent Maine juice all over my foot. And I have, on the other hand, a can of Narragansett beer. Do you ever hear of Narragansett beer? Well, they keep saying it on the Boston Red Sox. The only thing you can hear in Maine late at night on your radio is the Boston Red Sox games. And the guy keeps saying, have a Gansett. Well, I had a Gansett, a great big half-quart can of beer in one hand, a Syrian Dagwood in the other. The Kennebec River flowing dark and Stygian and primal below me. The wind blowing out of the northern Arctic. The great silver moon hanging high in the sky. And you could see a few lights in the Hathaway shirt factory where they were turning out, you know, stuff that the guys on Madison Avenue would flip over. And I'm sitting there sucking at the Gansett and eating the Syrian Dagwood. And this chick is sitting next to me. Do I have to tell you anymore? Do I have to tell you anymore? Well, I never have forgotten it. All right. So great food. Now, you want to hear another one? Reset that, George, please. I'll tell you another one, see? I'll tell you another story. Great meals. Unexpectedly great meals. And I keep thinking to myself, one day I'm going back. Hey, is there anybody tonight? Listen, hey. Is there anybody tonight listening up in Maine who has ever been to Waterville and has gotten himself a Syrian dagwood? I'm serious. That place is open. If you're traveling around in Maine, I found out now, if you're traveling around near Waterville, Maine, they are open every night to midnight. The Syrian dagwood joint. And now, what is a Syrian dagwood? How do you explain a scarlatta, a scarlatti sonata? You can't say, well, it's a piece of meat. I can't tell you it's a sandwich. A Syrian dagwood is aggressively sensual. Let's put it that way. And indescribable. Is there anybody out there listening? You got 9 minutes to call. We'd like to hear if there's anybody in Maine. Now, some guy calls, oh, yes, I'm a caller calling from Camden, Maine. It's not easy up there. And we recognize you up there, friends. Wouldn't you love to be down here? My God, if you can only get out of that rat hole, wouldn't it be groovy? You're going to be walking along Broadway tonight, right? Right. Boy, slobs, we're in Fun City, you know? We got it made. Right? We got a groovy mayor to hope that. Oh, yeah. Who do you got? That little fat guy that runs the drugstore, right? We'd love to hear from you. You want to hear another great meal? You want to hear another one? Do you? Okay. See, part of a meal, friends, is not just the meal itself. It's the ambience, the zeitgeist, the surroundings, the frame, you see. It's where it's seen, how it is, right? Okay. Another scene. Shepherd is in Maine again. Where is he this time? He's sitting at the far end of a lake that contains obviously no more than 6 fish. He's been fishing in this lake now for 9 hours, hasn't even got the small bite. And he's in a canoe. And this is a small plastic woods canoe. You got it? The wind is blowing out of the north. Now, the temperature is down around 32, 33. It's right on the edge of freezing. An exciting day. That's exciting on a lake. The wind is, I'm in the reeds, and I'm using a Fenwick ultra-light 6-foot bait casting rod, if you're curious. I have a number 303 ultra-light Garcia spinning reel. 2-pound test line. Understand what I'm doing now? Shepherd's whipping away at her, trying to get the interest of a smallmouth bass. Off on the far shore is my finished tent, which is a tiny tent, and by the way, built for art. Oh, is there somebody from Maine there? Is it really from Maine, or are they calling through? Is it some guy who used to live there and is calling? We don't want him. I want a call from Maine. Forget it. There's always some guy in Flushing that claims he's done it. Forget it. He's a phony. He has never been north of Staten Island. Forget it. I know that type. So you might as well turn them all off unless they're calling from Maine through the operator. I'm not interested. So anyway, I'm sitting in Maine. I have to think Maine is one of the great groovy undiscovered states in the nation, really. The wind, is blowing. It's cold, see. Now, I have left this chick in this little 2-man tent. Oh, this is calling from Maine? I don't believe it. I'll give him a test. I have an absolute unfallible test for Maine. Hello? Yeah. Hey, Augusta, man, put him on there. You're calling from where? You've been to Waterville. Can you hear him on the air? Well, wait a minute, man. Where are you calling from?
Augusta, Maine.
And you've been where?
I've been to John's restaurant and had those Syrian daggers.
You know John, right?
Yeah, I sure do.
Do you agree with me what I'm telling you?
Nothing better for man's digestion than a good Syrian dagwood and a can of Narragansett beer after a hard night studying in the Colby College Library.
Man, you are talking my language. You agree that it's quicker than X-Lax and more fun?
Uh, out your ass with a car.
All right, man. Easy, boy. Easy, man. Easy. Take it easy now. It's all right. Thank you very much. Now, wait a minute. Now, where do you live?
I live in Augusta, Maine.
Yeah, how is it up there tonight?
It's rainy and damp, but it's very nice. The daffodils are blooming, and the moose are
hollering at one another. Okay, man. You have been to John's, and you have had a Syrian Dagwood. And you got to agree that what I'm telling you, eating a Syrian Dagwood at night, sitting on the, you know, that dam there by the Hathaway shirt place?
Yeah, that dam is run by the Kennebec Water Power Company.
That's correct. And sitting on that dam at midnight, eating a Syrian Dagwood and drinking a Gansett is one of life's more exquisite moments, correct?
It is. What season did you do that in?
In late fall. No, I was not. I was up there fishing.
Good for you. Where do you go fishing?
Well, I go fishing. You're curious?
Sure. Well, I go fishing up that way myself.
In the Belgrade Lake chain.
Sure.
Where I am. You know where Messalonsky is?
Yep.
Okay.
A friend of mine has a cottage up in Messalonsky, Sydney.
Right. And you know where Oakland, Maine is?
Yep, sure do.
All right. Have I established my credentials? Thank you. Oh, man. You never know what's going to happen, do you? Bring it up big, George, please. You know, I had at least five other great meals that I was going to describe to you. For example, I was going to describe coming back. No, you don't want to hear about that. You don't want to hear about the porterhouse steak at Montauk, do you? Most of my meals are involved in cold weather. You're not curious about one of the most totally sensual lobsters I've ever had in my life? Not curious about that, are you? Of course not. Have no curiosity at all, have you? All right, George. And so each man carries with him this faintly discernible envelope of personal history. It's kind of like a... Every man is his own Zeppelin, his own blimp, floating high in the atmosphere, you know, dragging his anchor chains, waiting for something groovy to happen, figuring that it's only going to happen to the other guys, and it usually does, and figuring that the things that have happened to him have been purely accidental, which is true. As a matter of fact, life itself is accidental. One gets right down to it. You know, there's a whole scientific... But that's beyond this course, right, huh? Then again, there are those of you who believe in astrology. Oh, man. Of course, there are other guys who, you know, believe that if you throw clothespins up in the air and they point north, it's going to work out this winter. You know, so six of one, half does the other. Then there's the guy that with the caterpillar theory, we can go on and on and on. You know, just keep standing like that and think a good thought. You know, try. Clean